Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
Now, as we've been discussing, the Cabinet's COVID-19 subcommittee is meeting today to decide on the final details of the plan to reopen all remaining sectors of society. The roadmap will be signed off and approved by the full Cabinet tomorrow, with the unwinding of broader COVID measures expected to begin next week, such as returning to the office and full capacity on public transport. So we're going to start our discussion this afternoon with education, because of course many of the schools are back today, and we're joined now by Christine Losher, who is Professor of Immunology and Associate Dean for Research at DCU. And in a moment we're going to be speaking to Donnacha O'Leary, who's Sinn Féin TD for Cork South Central and also education spokesperson for the party. So Christine, as I say, we'll start with yourself. And schools are back today, lots of pictures going around social media of all the children heading back in their uniforms, and one of the things that won't be in every classroom, according to Education Minister Norma Foley, is CO2 monitors. The idea apparently is that the monitors will move from classroom to classroom at designated times. Is that sufficient, do you think, in terms of monitoring the levels of potential virus in a room, or the CO2 levels in a room?
Yeah, so hi, Sarah, good afternoon. So the reason for the CO2 monitors is that we know the ventilation is a really good de-risker for COVID transmission. And CO2 monitors really will just allow you to kind of monitor the buildup of CO2 in a room, which would indicate the level of ventilation. So they're a really good tool to have in a classroom. And, you know, I, like most parents, are a little bit shocked as to why there's not one in every single classroom when we know that they work. So the sharing between classrooms, you know, my understanding was that all of the classrooms are in pods, and that, you know, I would think that walking from one classroom to another and teachers sharing things like this probably wouldn't be a good idea. I don't know why they're not in every classroom. I can only assume that it's either a resource issue or they couldn't get enough of them in time. But I think it should be an absolute priority over the next few weeks to get one of these into every single classroom, because one of the things that it really does is it alerts the teacher to the levels of CO2 in the room and to what the ventilation is doing, and it allows the teacher to be able to respond. So if it's not in the classroom and the ventilation's not working very well, it's not very windy outside, for example, then the teacher is not aware that they have to respond in any way, whether it's taking the children outside for a breath of fresh air. So I really think that it needs to be prioritised, that these need to be in every single classroom. They de-risk the situation for kids in school.
Now, I know the WHO has been talking about all of this today. It's reiterated some of the measures that they think are needed to improve the school environment, as lots of countries around the world obviously are returning to school. And they've included better ventilation, smaller class sizes, social distancing and regular COVID testing for both children and staff. So on the first one there, better ventilation, is it the case then that we can't say we're doing that with any accuracy unless we have CO2 monitors in every room?
I think we're not doing it to the fullest of our ability unless we have CO2 monitors in every room. And I think when you look at the other three things they're suggesting, we're less able to do them, which would mean that the one thing that we are able to do, we should be doing to the absolute maximum.
Mm, because smaller class sizes is just not something that's even been discussed, I don't think, you know, as part of the whole debate over the last year.
Absolutely. And it's something that's not possible. I mean, people have been asking for smaller class sizes for years. Sure. For lots of different reasons. And I don't think that, you know, the schools don't have the capacity to be able to have small class sizes. What they do have is they have kind of, you know, operational things, like they've cleared all of the additional things out of classrooms so they can space children out, you know, so they have, you know, all of the presses and, you know, even just logistically, they've done things in classrooms so they can space children out. They've kept them in desks, in little pods away from each other. They've done everything they can do to address the fact that they can't do smaller class sizes.
Okay.
They've done everything they can do to address the social distancing. But we can do better with the ventilation.
And what then about that last one, regular COVID testing for children and staff? We could be doing that, couldn't we? But we're not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been lots of controversy and different opinions about the usefulness of antigen testing, mostly because it's not a diagnostic tool, but rather an indication about whether somebody could be potentially infectious at the time. So they are a good tool. There seems to be a hesitancy about implementing them in environments such as schools. Ford, the university, have just run a pilot scheme, and they're currently running a pilot scheme as to whether antigen testing is going to be useful in a large-scale education environment. So there's no reason why we couldn't be doing it. But what we do have available to parents, and I think we all need to be aware of this with kids going back to school, is that, you know, it's very easy to get access to a COVID test in the walk-in testing centres at the moment. And the turnaround time is 24 hours. So if there is a worry about what's going to happen over the next few months, kids are going to start getting coughs and sniffles as they would normally during the winter time. There's a very easy, quick way of getting that child tested and getting a quick turnaround time. So if we don't have regular COVID testings in schools, parents have access to COVID testings with quick turnaround times in walk-in centres. Mm.
But apart from that, you know, obviously the asymptomatic element of this virus is something that's been a feature, and particularly, I think, in younger children. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, Christine. So is there any reason not to be doing antigen testing, or do you think is that a mistake that we're not doing that?
I think it's another tool that we could be rolling out. I think the questions would be logistically, how would you do it? Do you do a spot check on one class, you know, in a period of time over a week? Do you spot check a couple of children in the class? I think it would be difficult to do antigen testing on all children all the time, because it's, you know, I mean, it's not a nice test, you know, so children, you don't want to put children through that unnecessarily. It would be a good spot checking tool. It would be a good spot checking tool. At some stage throughout their time in school.
Just before we move on to the wider reopening then, you mentioned that it will be problematic potentially for teachers to be carrying the CO2 monitors from classroom to classroom, as apparently is the plan. Is there a potential here that the plan that we have in place is more likely to cause harm than good?
I don't think it's going to necessarily cause huge harm. I mean, a lot of teachers are vaccinated now, you know, regardless of their age, because we've been in a situation where even younger teachers have now had access to vaccines. So I think that because we're dealing with a largely vaccinated population of teachers, it will be less so. But it doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, transferring anything from one classroom to another, teachers going into one classroom and then into another, just doesn't fit with what we're trying to do to keep kids safe in school. And it seems to me like the only explanation for it is that they didn't buy more monitors. And I don't think there's any excuse for that when we know that it can help.
OK, well, we are trying to get a representative from government to discuss all of these issues. And hopefully we will have somebody at some stage in the programme to discuss it. I want to ask you about public transport then, Christine. A figure being reported today that when all public transport is operating at 100% capacity, and that is due to happen from Wednesday, when that happens, an extra 1.5 million school children and college students, as well as the returning office workers, will be using it. And I just wonder what you think about that 1.5 million people all going on to public transport by the middle of this week.
Yeah. So I think the important thing for me at the moment is, right, this is the third time that we have sent children back into schools, into what we have tried to make a really safe environment. The other two times we sent children back into schools, we did nothing else. We opened up nothing else. We opened up the schools and everything else stayed closed in order to keep them as safe as possible in terms of community levels. Now we're thinking about sending kids into schools this week, and we've done that. And then opening up something huge like public transport. And for me, I just think that's too many things at the same time. We need to prioritise having our children back in schools and to be able to see if that has any impact over the next few weeks. And then public transport can come on the back of that. And the reason for the public transport issue is because there's a mandate now to get everybody back into the office. And again, why are we doing all of this at the same time? my view would be we've done this slowly but surely, and now we're just racing too fast, I think, in terms of where we are with our background case
number. But, you know,
number.
There are plenty of other countries in Europe and across the world who are much further ahead than us. I think we only need to look across the water to the UK and what they did a couple of months ago at this stage. You know, we've 88% of people fully vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Like, at what point do we allow public transport to be, you know, fully open if we don't allow it now?
Well, I think in the same week as we send all the kids back to school is probably not the right time. I mean, we're talking about spacing things out by a few weeks. I just don't understand what the rush is to do too many things too quickly. And because we've done everything in a very staggered manner and it has worked well. And I think one of the best examples of that is we opened indoor dining on the background of high vaccination numbers. We use the vaccine certs. There's been no talk of closing down indoor dining when our case numbers went up because we did it on the back of breaking the link of hospitalizations and severe diseases. So if we've opened schools this week, we need to prioritize those. Mm. And we need, in my view, delaying these things by a few more weeks just gives everybody time to see if there's an impact.
And of course, I think, workplaces aren't, you know, officially opening for another couple of weeks yet, or the return to the office won't be opening for a couple of weeks yet. So that won't be affecting public transport as much. But children do have to use buses, obviously, to get to school in a lot of instances. So I suppose there's no way around it to an extent. One person has texted to say, I would not be happy with someone sitting beside me on a bus. I'm horrified for this to happen so soon. But I'm going to move on. Just a second, Christine, but I don't want to be making people more concerned than they should be. If you're fully vaccinated and someone sits beside you on a bus with their mask on and you have your mask on, I assume you're safe enough.
You're as safe as you can be. I mean, I think one of the worrying things about opening public transport is we're all very aware that our public transport didn't have enough capacity before COVID-19. So if we have a situation where we are going from having reduced capacity to normal capacity, that's people piled into buses and trains and standing room. And if that's all of that, then that's a very, very overcrowded environment in a very poorly ventilated situation. So it's a different story if it's opening capacity where it's seated only, where it's absolutely with masks and it's maximum ventilation, then it's much, much safer.
Okay,
but
Christine,
I would worry about the capacity.
I understand. Christine Losher, thank you very much for joining us this evening. And waiting on the line is also Donnacha O'Leary, Sinn Féin TD for Cork South Central, and also education spokesperson. And we might start with education, Donnacha, and the CO2 monitors. You heard the concerns raised by Christine there. What is Sinn Féin policy on this?
Look, I mean, I suppose it's something that we've been looking for since before last Christmas. And it was what I said to the minister at the time was that the Christmas break of the 2020 Christmas was the perfect time to begin the process of installing them. I suppose winter is a particularly dangerous time in that, or I suppose a challenging time for schools to manage ventilation, because obviously, you know, it's not the most tropical country in the world. And, you know, there needs to be a balance there in terms of ventilation and ensuring that the welfare of children and staff is safeguarded. So I don't think that there's any excuse that we're only now really in the last month or two beginning to properly examine this. We've known for some time that the science was that the pandemic is primarily airborne through aerosol transmission. So, monitors were obviously going to be needed.
Do you have any understanding as to why there isn't one in every classroom? Is that a policy decision or a resource decision?
Well, I think a mixture of both, but I think the resource issue isn't necessarily budgetary as far as I understand it. It's the fact that there is a difficulty in obtaining enough, but I think that is primarily because they've embarked on this far too late. Now, I hope that the department continues to seek to acquire them so that we can have them every classroom, because, like, if you just think about it, like, just the practicalities of this, like, you know, there's one staff member in a classroom. Like, I mean, sometimes there'll be SNAs and sometimes there'll be resource teachers and things like that, but, you know, the practicalities of, okay, I need to figure out, I've had this monitor a while now in my classroom, I need to get it down the corridor.
Yeah, and Christine went through those issues.
I need to make sure that the children are being
Sorry to interrupt you, Donnacha.
I might just leave it.
Yeah, okay, so you're in favour of CO2 monitors in every classroom. What about masks then for children in schools? Because I know this is something that was raised by Luke O'Neill over the weekend. He believes it's something that should be looked at for children. What's Sinn Féin's position on that?
Look, I mean, I think, you know, obviously everywhere that, you know, public health advice has required masks, we have agreed with that. But until such time, I think, as there's a very clear recommendation in favour of masks, then I would have big concerns about that. Like, I mean, I suppose, you know, it's already required at secondary school. At primary school, like, you're still learning to communicate. And, you know, for a lot of the classes at primary school level, children, you know, need facial tics, they need facial recognition, they need to understand what's going on in the context, and masks, I think, disrupt that. So I think the evidence in favour of it would need to be really, really compelling. Okay. Before that would be required. That's not a recommendation that NPHET have made so far, unless they make it, and that the grounds for it are very strong, then no, I wouldn't be calling for that.
You heard Christine Losher's concerns about full capacity on public transport in around the same week that we're reopening schools. What do you think about that? Do you have any concerns?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I suppose the minister's announcement maybe probably took a lot of people by surprise, and especially given that, you know, cabinet meetings today are about the reopening of society, so that you would imagine a lot of this stuff would have come together as part of a thought-out plan, and this seems to be a bit parcelled out. Obviously, it's an objective that we want to reach. We want to see 100% capacity on public transport.
But would you support it this week?
Like, I mean, I suppose my concern is that this is motivated more primarily by the fact that we don't have enough capacity in the public transport system to ensure social distancing, and maybe a corner is being cut. But look, I mean, I suppose what I would hope to know is that if public health advice is satisfied, or the NPHET is satisfied that this is safe enough, if that's the case, then we wouldn't oppose it. But my misgivings are that perhaps instead of what we should have been doing over the course of the last year or two in increasing capacity in public transport, that we're cutting corners here. And we're just getting rid of the social distancing instead of increasing the capacity, and that in terms of school bus transport as well.
Just finally then, I know Arts Minister Catherine Martin has said that she's optimistic live entertainment at indoor venues could return by early September through the use of vaccine certificates. And we heard from Justin Green as well earlier today on the News of One. He was saying that the industry is very much in favour of that. They're very happy to use vaccine certs or COVID passes. You're against that though. Why?
Well, look, I mean, I suppose in terms of when the COVID passes came out, one of the points that we had big concerns about was the fact that a lot of people who weren't yet in a position to get the vaccine, younger people primarily, wouldn't have the opportunity. You know, they would have to work in these places, but they wouldn't have the opportunity to avail of indoor dining or entertainment and the arts. Obviously, that situation has changed a bit, but it would still be our view that the COVID pass alone is not the solution. Because, like, I mean, if you look at other jurisdictions, yes, vaccination and proof of vaccination is an option to ensure that people can use a service such as the arts or outdoor entertainment or indoor entertainment for them. You know, there are other means, and whether that's a PCR test within the last 2 days or an antigen test within the last 24 hours or other methods like that. Like, I mean, I think it is a, you know, if we're going to be using the COVID passport, and that seems to be the case from what the minister is saying, it needs to be complemented by other measures for those who are still not had the opportunity to be fully vaccinated. That number is getting smaller, of course, and that's welcome. And we would encourage everyone who hasn't got a vaccine to go get the vaccine. But there are still people who haven't had the chance to get either a first or a second dose. And while that's still the case, I think they deserve the chance to get a negative test so that they can go to the concert, they can go to the match.
Keep the entertainment industry closed to allow for 10% of people who haven't got fully vaccinated the chance to get vaccinated.
I don't know how you came to that conclusion from what I said there. I think what I said was that we should be opening the live entertainment industry, and if we're going to be using COVID passport as the minister's plan seems to be, which we had misgivings about, but if that's going to be the plan, then there needs to be opportunities for people who aren't vaccinated but who can prove that they are not carrying the virus, whether that's a recent PCR test or a recent antigen test, that they also can have the opportunity, as I say, to go to the bar, to go to the concert, to go to the match. I don't see there's any reason why that can't be done. It's been done in other jurisdictions. It's ensuring safety. Nobody should be cavalier about this, but we are in a different place.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry about the delay in the line. It made for a slightly awkward conversation, but thank you very much for joining us this evening. That's Sonica O'Leary, Sinn Féin TD. And before that, we were speaking to Christine Losher, who's Professor of Immunology and Associate Dean for Research at DCU.